You are Locked On Saints, your daily New Orleans Saints podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What is good, Houdat Nation, and welcome to Locked On Saints, your daily podcast covering the New Orleans Saints, brought to you by the Locked On Podcast Network, where you get to hear the local experts on the biggest stories, your team, every day. Ross Jackson here, your host, covering your favorite team, the New Orleans Saints, like nobody else does it. Lead analyst over at AllSaintsConsidered.com, your source for up-to-the-minute Saints news for Saints fans by Saints fans. You know what it is. Go ahead and throw me a follow over on Twitter at RossJacksonASC. And if this is your first time catching the show, thank you so much for being here and welcome. Please take some time to rate, review, share, and subscribe. It's a big help to me, but it also helps you keep up to date when new episodes drop every Monday through Friday. And remember, you can find Locked On Saints on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, as well as the new podcasting app Himalaya, and just about anywhere else that you get your podcast. And remember that when you're out on the road, be sure to tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Saints. Another quick episode for you today. Reminder that I'm out of town, so we'll have better audio coming back to you tomorrow. Today, we're going to break down Marcus Sherrill's new contract, talk about an update on defensive end Robert Quinn and where he's headed, then discuss the national media's infatuation with the Saints after the league agreed to expand replay, and then we'll take a look at some of the biggest stories from around the league, including why Bengals owner Mike Brown was the only dissenting owner vote in the replay expansion proposal. All that and a little bit of Lanyap right here on today's episode of Locked On Saints, your team every day. All right, so let's start off today's episode by taking a look at Marcus Sherrill's new contract. We know he signed a one-year deal. We got some information back on that per Josh Katzenstein at jkatzenstein on Twitter. Marcus Sherrill's contract with the Saints is a one-year minimum salary benefit deal. He received a $90,000 signing bonus and $930,000 in base salary, but has a cap number of just $735,000 for 2019. So that's just part of what this contract does. So he gets that $90,000 signing bonus, which really knocks it down to about $840,000 in terms of what he would be guaranteed in his first year, quote unquote. And then he would, you know, and then the benefit deal knocks some off of that in terms of what his base salary is. Now, none of this is guaranteed as it looks like. I don't see any guarantees or anything at this moment. Maybe we'll find out later. So, you know, if things don't work out, he could be a clean cut, but I don't expect that the Saints would cut Marcus Sherrill's unless they somehow, you know, unless they get another great kick returner or punt returner in the draft. So the one thing that I want to talk about here is that, so we look at Marcus Sherrill's coming to New Orleans on a $930,000 deal, basically. Then we have Nick Easton, who came on a $2.5 million deal for the first year. And then Latavius Murray, who came on a cheaper deal for the first year as well. And so you have all three of these Vikings players that came over to New Orleans on essentially cheap deals for the first year. Now, if they remain throughout their contract, in particular with the cases of Latavius Murray and Nick Easton, if they keep through their contract, they stand to make a little bit more money. And of course, Nick Easton, if he gets into the fourth year of his deal, he gets a $7 million contract that year. So it's just interesting, though, to watch these players come from Minnesota to New Orleans and all take these really sort of team-friendly structured deals. Kind of makes you wonder what's going on in Minnesota, though. I'm not here to accuse anything or anything like that, but we know that, you know, Zimmer has had some issue with some players before, personally or publicly calling out Xavier Rhodes, for instance, and things like that. So you got to wonder how much of those kinds of things are sort of happening behind the curtain that helped these players make a decision to come to a culture like New Orleans and, you know, play here as opposed to sticking around in Minnesota. So the other big piece of news that happened today in terms of roster news for the Saints, not an addition or anything like that, but just something to keep an eye on, though there are no final details yet. The Miami Dolphins look like they're expected to trade Robert Quinn to the Dallas Cowboys. Now, you remember, of course, we did a couple of episodes devoted to the fact, or at least segments, devoted to the fact that the Saints were in the market for Robert Quinn. Robert Quinn visited the Saints this past Monday and really didn't hear much after that, which kind of tells you that the Saints weren't really that interested. They didn't really see what it was that they were looking for. So looks like now the Saints are going to be turning their attention and focus back to Ziggy Ansah, whose medicals are expected to come back, or at least his checkup and medicals are expected to come back in the mid-April, so we're coming up on that in just a couple weeks. And if his medical is clear, you can expect the Saints to make a good pursuit on him, because they're not the only team that's interested. There are a couple of other teams that are waiting on those medicals as well, so you can expect the Saints to really sort of pounce if he comes back with, you know, good medicals. Looks like that shoulder is really gonna, you know, hold up. The thing that limited him last year might not get in his way this year, and so if that's the case, you can definitely see the Saints going after him so that he can rotate with Marcus Davenport, which I think honestly might be a little bit of a better fit anyway. We talked about the Robert Quinn contract and what that would mean and what they would need to do, what the Saints would need to do if they ended up giving Robert Quinn a new contract. Does that mean that they also need to extend Cam Jordan? There's just a lot of existing sort of logistics that could have made it intolerable for the Saints, or at least unpalatable for the Saints, whereas you can, you know, wait a couple weeks and then, you know, give it a shot, see how Ziggy Ansah's medicals come back, and then just sign him off the street, essentially, because he's a free agent. You don't have to worry about too much. So you go ahead, you get him in, you get a mentor from Marcus Davenport, you get an experienced rotational edge rusher that gets to spell him every now and then, and then that rotational role helps to keep him healthy. I think it's a good match. It's a good match for both teams. I think that it's a better match for Ziggy than it is, you know, than he would experience going to another team that's going to expect him to do 900 snaps a season or 800 snaps a season and everything, and then potentially hurt himself again. Whereas in this case, he would just sort of split reps with Marcus Davenport, which would help sort of improve his longevity throughout the season. All right, y'all, stick around. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the national media and their newest infatuation with the Saints following the recent rule change expanding replay. So we got that coming up for you right here on Locked On Saints, your team every day. All right, Huda Nation, welcome back to Locked On Saints, your team every day. Remember, if you're not already doing it, make sure that you have subscribed to the podcast, especially using the Himalaya podcast app, which gives you personally curated playlists as well as new features every day. You can download that from your app store and then, of course, subscribe to Locked On Saints. All right, so I want to talk now about the national media and all of the things, just all the attention that they're giving to New Orleans right now and the Saints. And you know what they always say, there's no bad publicity, right? Publicity is publicity, all of that. But one of the things that ESPN in particular has done, and in particular Bomani Jones on the show, I don't even know what show he is. It's one of the daytime shows that nobody watches because everybody's got jobs. He was going off about the Saints along with his partner or whatever he is across the table, talking about how, you know, the Saints and Saints fans and their crybabies and, you know, the whole same tired rhetoric that everybody has sort of been passing along to the Saints this offseason, even though, and it comes from fan bases of teams that agree with the Saints and have also come against, you know, the same types of things that the Saints have. You know, I talked the other day about the Lions. I guess it was yesterday about the Lions and them, them having suffered because of a blown call. Even the Saints and Sean Payton even acknowledged that, you know, they were the beneficiaries of it in that week 16 game against the Pittsburgh Steelers, to where the Steelers lost that game and ended up not being able to go to the playoffs, all of that. So, like, the big thing that everybody's starting to draw conclusions to now is, oh, I can't wait for this to turn around and bite the Saints in the butt, and it's going to end up being, you know, it's going to end up losing a game for the Saints, and how many defensive pass interference penalties are they going to be caught with because of this, you know, rule change that they advocated for and everything. And that's the thing, is like, that's the point. That's the point. The point is that no one should be immune to penalties. Nobody should be, you know, benefiting from bad officiating, even the Saints, who got screwed by it this past season. But that doesn't mean that just because they got screwed by it, it doesn't mean that they believe that they shouldn't be held accountable for their own actions and their own potential benefits that come from bad officiating. That's the idea, is to make this game more consistent and more reliable, protecting the product better than what's being protected now. So you're holding referees responsible, you're holding officials sort of what's the word looking for, accountable, because of the fact that if they make a bad call, we'll be able to see it and correct it in real time. So it's a little bit of a cleanup crew for the officials and these officiating staffs that need the support. They need the support. That's the thing. And I think that's something that a lot of people aren't talking about. You know, you can sit there and you can talk about how, you know, this is an insult to the officials. You can talk about how this is an insult to the referees, which is another argument that I've seen. But that's just bogus, because this is the idea is that it gives them a support system to make sure that, you know, they maintain the game. And then you don't end up with any of these, you know, oh, it was rigged, or it was a you know, it was fixed, or whatever. You know, you don't end up with those things because there's some checks and balances. And that's what the NFL has been missing in terms of officiating for a very long time, a very, very long time. And that's part of what this rule change does. It creates some checks and balances, whether it be from booth reviews in the last 2 minutes or reviews that are brought upon and challenges that are brought upon by the coaches. The other big argument is that it extends the game. It's going to make the game 10 minutes longer. First of all, who is mad about football taking long? We're not talking about baseball here. We're talking about football. Nobody's mad about a football game going long. No one cares if a football game goes an extra 10 or 15 minutes. Get out of here with that crap. Secondly, it's not going to make the game any longer because you still only get two challenges and then the bonus challenge if you win both challenges. It doesn't mean that the coaches are going to get five flags all of a sudden that they're going to be able to throw throughout the game and extend the game. It doesn't work that way. There's no difference between challenging a call of pass interference or a no call of pass interference, either on the defensive or offensive side, and challenging a fourth and goal from the one, and you know, you're challenging to see if you broke the plane or not. There's no difference. It's going to be the same. It's not going to be this type of thing to where every three plays you're going to get a challenge flag out there. That's impossible. That can't happen. You might see it a little bit too much at the beginning of the season in those final 2 minutes when it comes down to the booth reviews, but then eventually they're going to sort of figure out, okay, these are the types of ones that we will challenge, these are the types of ones that we won't challenge, things like that. So we're going to see all of this sort of balance out. It is going to be a little weird at the beginning of the season because people are going to wonder why it is being used or not being used, things like that. If you watch the end of that ridiculous, the ridiculous end to that LSU and Tennessee basketball game a few weeks ago, to where every two plays are going back to the review, it's not going to be like that. And if it is the first week, it definitely won't be the second week because they'll squash that and they'll figure out how to moderate how they're looking at this. But to sit there and play back footage from Mardi Gras, which is built on satire, which is built on parody, and then to play that footage back and call that the protest of the NFL and not even talk about, you know, what the city of New Orleans did on Super Bowl Sunday, not talk about that, not show that. They tried to show the referees in one of the parades, can't remember which parade it was, but they tried to show the group dressed up like the referees, one of the crews dressed up like the referees during one of the parades, and call that the protest, and then call that their big grandstand. And it's like, that's not what that was. The big grandstand happened on Super Bowl Sunday. Y'all just missed it because you ain't paying attention. What happened was that you found this thing to where, you know, all these referees are out there dressed like clowns and everything, and then just sort of ignored the fact that that was Mardi Gras. That's built on satire, that's built on parody, that's the point. And then you use that as a means of trying to discount what the protest was, which first of all is ineffective, and second of all is just plain stupid. So get your act together, national media, because we ain't afraid of y'all here in New Orleans. Ain't nobody messing around with you, and this is good for the league. So that's my rants on all of that. Hope that you enjoyed that. When we come back here, we're going to be talking about some of the big stories from around the league, including why there was only one dissenting vote, Mike Brown, from the owner of the Cincinnati Bengals. He tells us why, not us, he ain't talked to me, but he talks about why he was the one and only dissenting vote. We'll talk about that as well as about a few other big stories from around the league coming up right here on Locked On Saints, your team every day. All right, family, welcome back to Locked On Saints, your team every day. Thank you again for bearing with me throughout that rant in the last segment. I hope that it was at least enjoyable. I know I sure had a lot of fun going through it. So right now we're going to keep on the subject of the replay vote, the replay expansion. And as we all know, essentially 63 people voted on the rule change. So that was 32 coaches, 32 owners, 32-0 in terms of coaches voted yes for the rule change. And then the owner vote came down to 31-1. That one dissenting vote was Cincinnati Bengals owner Mike Brown. And he gave some reasons today to ESPN about why he voted no. And he says the reason that we are against it is because it interrupts the game. I think that it's in some way sort of odd to see people all sitting there waiting for somebody in New York to tell them what is or isn't. I'd rather just play the game. So this goes along with the idea of stoppages and how it affects the flow of the game. And this is an argument that I jive with a little bit more than the, oh, it's going to make the game longer. I understand the idea that it breaks rhythm and everything like that, but I got to tell you, man, like when it comes to these replays, when it comes to an egregious missed call like we saw in the NFC Championship game, and even I'll go so far as to say like we saw in the Steelers game with that pass interference that the Saints benefited from, I don't know what's worse. I don't know what breaks the rhythm more, if it's going to be the replay and then getting the call right, or if it's going to be, you know, missing a call like that and then watching, you know, a team spirit break, essentially, you know. So I don't know which one is actually worse. And here's my thing, is that if you want to play the game, you want to play the game correctly. And right now, I can't say that they're not playing the game correctly because execution and everything like that is there. But in terms of what the rules that they're being subjected to, it's not actually allowing them to play the game correctly, because all of a sudden, it's, you know, first, it's third and 15, and then you miss that pass interference penalty, and that could have made it first and, you know, one on the goal line, depending on where the pass interference took place, and then all of a sudden you're punting the ball. So I don't know which one breaks up the rhythm more, having your offense give away the ball or stopping for, you know, 2 minutes to check the review and then picking up and moving forward from there. But I have the feeling that it's probably better to just give it a couple minutes, check the replay, pick it up, play it from there. NFL.com posted a 4-round mock draft in which, of course, the Saints have one lone pick at number 62. And again, we see the Saints connected to a wide receiver from South Carolina, Deebo Samuel. Now, Matt Miller actually tweeted out yesterday that he is hearing some buzz about Deebo Samuel as a top 40 player. So maybe he wouldn't be available for the Saints at 62, but I still wage that he is a great pick for the Saints at 62 if he happens to be there. Solid wide receiver, you know, could be that person that makes it so that they don't have to try to bring or force Dez Bryant back if he's not healthy, and then also adds that kick return ability, which Marcus Sherrills doesn't do because he is pretty strictly a punt returner. So could be a great selection for the Saints at 62 if Deebo Samuel is there on the board. And then finally, with the last bit of news that I want to talk about today, I guess it's not really news, but it's something fun to take a look at. If you head over to the NFL on Fox Twitter page, that's at NFL on Fox, you'll see that they've been doing a bracket for the NFL's best fan base. Well, they're into the Elite Eight now, and the Saints are a part of that and are somehow right now up against the Buffalo Bills tied at 50%. So if you're hearing this in the next 21 hours and 51 minutes as I'm recording this, head over to their Twitter page, that's at NFL on Fox, and vote for the Saints. There's no reason that this should be tied up. Bills Mafia is a really, really great fan base, but they're nothing compared to the Houdat Nation. So go out there and, you know, make your feelings heard, all that. Make sure your voice is heard. Get out there and vote for the Saints as the best fan base in the NFL. All right, y'all. Thank you so much for being here and hanging out with me today on Thursday's episode of Locked On Saints. Make sure you come back tomorrow as the Saints are finally starting to turn their focus to the NFL draft after having a very successful free agency. Tomorrow, we're going to review free agency in the first segment, and then we're going to talk about some of the NFL draft prospects that the Saints have had visits with, dinners with, things like that. That's what we'll be talking about tomorrow. And of course, audio quality will be better tomorrow. We'll be back to our full length starting tomorrow as well when I get back home. So for right now, I just want to say thank you so much for coming through. Once again, I am Ross Jackson. You can find me on Twitter at Ross Jackson ASC. Hit me up. Let me know how the family's doing. Let me know how you're living. Let me know how your mom and them. Tell your friends, family, and fellow Saints fans about the show. And please take some time to review, as every little bit helps a lot. To find Locked On Saints, just tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Saints at home or in your vehicle. And please be sure to subscribe on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and with the new Himalaya Podcast app so you know when the newest episodes drop every Monday through Friday. Thank you so much for all your support, all of your love, and for helping me grow this family. This has been Locked On Saints. And trust, Houdat Nation, I'll holla at you.